Good evening. I'd like to start off first by saying we wish you a refuah shleima for Lemel. Excuse me one second. For Usher Lemel ben Shana Liba. And it's the perfect sedra for doing so, because at the end of the parsha we see when Miriam got sick, even though she had spoken ill of Moshe, seemingly ill, she was saying it tochacha because of her ignorance, but nevertheless, Moshe prayed for her in the shortest prayer possible, only 11 letters, Vayomer Kel No Refon No La, and we wish the same speedy recovery. The word No is used twice in the pasuk. The first one is to do it, a please is a supplication to Hashem to please heal her, and also to do it speedily. Sometimes it can drag out, but we want her to please Hashem to give a refuah shleima to Usher Lemel, and not just a please to recover, but to recover speedily, as Moshe asked on behalf of Miriam, which maybe I can explain a little bit more. But nevertheless, it's a very appropriate sedra to ask for a refuah shleima. The parsha begins, very interestingly enough, it says, that God tells Aaron, God tells Moshe to tell Aaron, and what's very interesting, of course, is that in previous sedras, we have Yatot, Tzavez, Bnei Yisrael, Yichu Elecha, Elecha, Shem and Zayizok, Kosis, Lamaol, Alos, Ner Tamid. We have that at the beginning of Parshas Baloscha. Then we have at the beginning, again, at the Shvi in Parshas Emo, which we read a few weeks ago, is Lahalos Ner Tamid again. So why would the Torah have to repeat the whole commandment to light the menorah and mention now Aaron? Because the previous times, if you take a look at the wording over there, was V'atot Tzaveh Es Bnei Yisrael. The wording was done for Klal Yisrael. There was a mitzvah, a tzivui, to light a menorah. It wasn't given to anybody in particular. And previously in Emor, it says, Li'aron uvanov, to Aaron and his children, to all of them, to have the tzivui to light the menorah. But here, for the lighting of the menorah at this time, for the dedication of the Mishkan, Aaron was given the singular commandment to do it himself, that God shows him to do it in the future, of course, not just in the future, but after they came into the land of Israel, after Aaron would pass away, then it would pass on to his children. But God was telling him now, Daber el Aaron v'yomartoi la b'halosoi es haneiros, el mu p'nei ha-menora yo'iru shivas haneiros. And that as long as you are alive for the 39 remaining years that we will be in the Midbar, it will be your job exclusively to light the menorah, nobody else, not just for the first time, but as long as you're alive, you will be the one to light the menorah as opposed to the other ones with just the general commandment for lighting the menorah itself. And of course we know when we light the menorah, the wicks are very interesting. Because the way the wicks face, you know, sometimes when you put the wicks in the Hanukkah menorah, and sometimes the flame burns one way to the left, to the right, depending on how the wick is bent, they were supposed to be bent in a very specific shape, and that the three on the left of the center and the three on the right of the center were supposed to face each other. El mul pnei ha-menorah, the yo'iru shivas haneiros, all seven was supposed to face supposed to face the center. In other words, the center is HaKadosh Baruch Hu or the Shechina. Of course, we look for the symbolism is where there were seven heavenly bodies. There are various things, 7 days in the week, various reasons for the number seven, and we could all think of for various things. Obviously, we know the 7 days of the week and so on and so forth. And all of these things at that time they only knew from seven heavenly bodies. They didn't know about Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto. And these were not on the chart, so to speak, at this point in time. Although obviously Abraham would have known about it, as we see from previous things. Now, we get to various topics in the parasha, and I just wanted to focus upon a couple of things in particular. One of the things, interestingly enough, that when Yisro now is, what was this Yisro's second visit or was this his first visit? And it would seem to be that since they hadn't moved, Yisro came to visit seemingly right after Matan Torah. We're not sure, there's a machlokus if he came before Matan Torah or after Matan Torah, but nevertheless, either way, it was they were didn't move for the first year after they got the from Vav Sivan, we just passed Shavuos, and from that time on, when Yisro was there, this was a year later, practically it's 11 months later, and Yisro was still visiting with them. He had left his home, which was actually nearby, very close, and that's why he was able to come to visit at this time, because his home in Midian was very close to where they were now, and he had messages to go back and forth to see what was doing in his own digs, in his own home, which he lived in those, comparatively speaking, in those times, in a palatial home. And when Moshe pleads with him, Al Nota Zovo Sonu Kiatoyodati, you know, that you know, you are our eyes and ears, you have given us such good advice, and we appreciate it, and we need it. We need your spiritual leadership as well. You've been such a good friend here, being here for all this time. But nevertheless, he says, I don't need, in other words, we're going. If you're going now, you're ready to travel into the land of Israel, which was what the plans were at this juncture. You were ready to travel, and this is all about the Yerusha that you're going to get, and everybody's going to get his plot of land. I don't need your plot of land. I have a lot of land of my own. I have a palatial home. I don't have to travel into the land of Israel. I don't want to take away from anybody else's plot. I have my own place where I'm going back home. And that's what his point is. Of course, we notice the difference in the different names, Vayomer Moshe L'Chovav, and that was a Lashon of Chiba. It's Chovav from the Lashon of Chiba, for love. And so this was sort of his nickname. It's like saying grandpa and things of that nature. Of course, Yisro had so many names, and even Yisro's father, Reuel, we see mentioned too. But of course, we see Elokei Avi Avraham, Elokei Avi Yitzchak, many times Avraham and Yitzchak. When Yaakov was saying it, the father, my father, Yitzchak, my father, Avraham. Avraham wasn't his father, it was his grandfather. But nevertheless, the same thing. Sometimes, you know, it's a surrogate father, whether it's a grandfather or not. So these are the things that we have with the names as well. So Yisro says he is about to go home, regardless of the whole situation. Now, we get into a very interesting topic once again of Pesach Sheni. What is Pesach Sheni all about? There were people who were, the question arises, who were these people who were tamei? And of course, most of them are Mefarshim comment that they were carrying their own Shel Yosef. Of course, some of the Mefarshim, some of the commentators want to say that they had also, wasn't just Yosef they were carrying, but they were carrying the bones of all the Shvatim. The Abarbanel takes issue with that and says, only Yosef's bones they were carrying, because Moshe went to get the Arono Shel Yosef. Hayom Rov Ayonos, what did the sea see when Moshe threw in the Shem HaMeforesh, so to speak, and the ocean split and spit up the bones of Yosef? And also, even not just from that, but Yoshua at the end, and it says in the Pasuk in Yoshua, Yes Atmos Yosef Hasher Heolu Mimitzrayim, that they had, he only mentions again the Atmos Yosef. So it would seem to be not going along with the Pashut Shat to say that they had the bones of the other Shvatim. It's very difficult to say. I guess for some reason they want to include them, but nevertheless it would appear to be on a very basic level that they only carried the bones of Yosef. Now, if these were Tamei, so they wanted, why should they be for doing a mitzvah of that nature, and they were Tamei and they weren't able to bring the Korban Pesach, they wanted another opportunity, a makeup date, so to speak. And what's interesting about this is we know about Hillel HaNasi. What was the issue at hand that gave him the ability to be the Nasi? On what juncture in his career was he appointed a Nasi? We know so much about Hillel that he was a poor person, and then he rose to the stature of being the leader of the Jewish nation at that point in time because he made a determination at this point in time when Erev Pesach was Shabbos and they didn't know, they were discussing whether or not it was the proper thing to do if they would bring the Korban Pesach on Shabbos because only certain Korbanos are allowed to be brought on Shabbos. Obviously, the Korban Shabbos that we have to bring, the Korban Musaf, we bring that. But just ordinary Korbanos we do not bring, and the question arose if they should bring the sacrifice of the Korban Pesach on Shabbos itself, even if it was Erev Pesach, should there be a makeup date or not. And he darshened the pasuk from the parsha when it says very simply in the pasuk that Vayatsu b'nei Yisrael es ha-posach b'moado. Now, the strange thing is, usually if the word, if the last word in the pasuk would be, posach would be the last word in the pasuk. Previous to the last word, it would say, Vayasu b'nei Yisrael es ha-pesach b'moado. So why does it say posach? Because that was a symbolism. The remez was that this was the final word in the pasuk and leaving us the drasha, Vayasu b'nei Yisrael es ha-posach. And the next pasuk, instead of Vayasu b'nei Yisrael es ha-posach b'moado, on the 14th day. In other words, the day for bringing the Korban Pesach would be on the 14th, regardless of what day of the week it is. B'moado, in its proper time, was the time. And he gave them this limud, and he broke up the psukim in this manner. And when they realized that the strength of his argument, they appointed him the Nasi. Of course, it wasn't just on the strength of this argument, but it showed them how the godless and how much sense he made when they were flummoxed, so to speak, of what to do on such a major event. What does it mean exactly, Asher Hoyu Tmeim LeNefesh Adam? In generally speaking, it says, Bo'esh Asher Taharu V'derech Lo Hoya. If somebody, it's not just you have a makeup date, it means you could file for an extension if you just feel troubled, like, you know, you don't have time to do your taxes and you file for an extension, it would seem okay, you know, to do it. There's no penalty. That's not what it's for. The point being that the makeup date is only if you are caught off guard and you happen to be very far away. It's not a choice. It's an option if something overcame you, you happen to be stuck far away and weren't able to bring the Korban Pesach in its proper time, and you weren't, or you happened to vishi your musalov mace b'fesa p'som, somebody died in your presence suddenly, and you were impure for that moment. So therefore, you get the makeup day. Do we eat chametz along with it? That's not a problem. None of the other dinim of Pesach apply to Pesach Sheni just to bring the Korban Pesach. And it's also, by the way, if you don't bring it, in other words, it's the only Korban Pesach is the only mitzvah that Rechayev Koris for not doing a maisa. This is not bringing Korban Pesach is you're just not doing it. You're not doing a maisa. Usually to get malchus, you have to perform an act, and here it's not that. And what we have is, when you don't do it, though, you have a 30-day grace period. If you didn't bring the Korban Pesach, you have a makeup date, meaning that until you do bring it on this 30 days, you're not chayiv on the Aveira until after the makeup date has passed. Very interesting in terms of that. So we learned b'moado in that time frame, it has to be done exactly on that date. Now, the Vayihi Ha'om Kimisonim Rabbi Oznei Hashem, this is where it's a very striking contrast. From this point, we had the first two parshas, and they're getting ready, Nosim Anachdu El HaMakom. We're getting ready now to march. They've had their marching orders. The flags are flying, and they're think that it's about time they're going into the land after this 11 months that they are now in the Midbar. But now, and they have the Mishkan, they have the Aron, and they're marching. And Vayiyom Kimisonim Rabbi Osnei Hashem. And it's very interesting, the wording in the pasuk doesn't say Vayiyom Misonim. They started to complain. Kimisonim means Rabbi Osnei Hashem. The only person to hear it, this was mutterings amongst the people. Sometimes we just mutter things that we're not talking to anybody. It's just that we're thinking out loud a little bit to ourselves, and we're complaining, when are we going to go already? You know, there are things that I'm unhappy with. And you're not complaining to anybody. So it's Kim is owning him. It's only as if you are complaining. So it's Rabbi Osnei Hashem, and it says, Vayishma Hashem. Only God heard. Nobody else heard. The neighbors that were walking along with other people, these were almost your private thoughts, but this is a tremendous lesson. Kim Isonim Rabbi Osnei Hashem. Only the ears of God heard that. We have our thoughts, we mutter things and thinks, and we think nobody hears it, but there's always the Ayin Roeh and the Ozen Shamas. God hears and knows what we're thinking, and we make, under our breath, we say things, but God hears it, and that's what it's saying in the Pasuk over here. Rabbi Osnei Hashem. Only God heard it by Yoshuvu Vayivku Gam B'nei Yisrael. And they start to make all these complaints, and when it says V'hosaf Suf Asher B'kirbo, and now we have the problem. We wondered after the Egel, he was brought about by the Erev Rav, that they were the ones who complained how many of the Erev Rav were left. But here the murmurings of the mixed multitude of the Asaf Suf, these people were still hanging around, and we let the riffraff, so to speak, influence us, and they got the ball rolling. Hisavu tavov. What does that mean, really? Hisavu tavov. They had this taivati meat. They had plenty of meat in the midbar. Every time they brought a carbon, they were able to eat meat. But the difference is, if you want to just go and have a barbecue, and have just, you know, here it is, Memorial Day weekend, and it's the big barbecue weekend for the reopening of the summer month, so to speak. And everybody, you go out in your backyard, you have a barbecue. And that wasn't available to them. When they wanted to eat meat, they had to use it as a carbon. They couldn't just kill an animal. And that's why Asher Nochal B'Mitzrayim Chinam, whenever they wanted to do something, if they wanted to have a barbecue, they would just have a barbecue. But now it had to be a ceremonial thing to bring a carbon and to do it all in a certain particular order, and it's a big to-do about it. It wasn't such an easy thing just to go slaughter an animal and have a barbecue, as we say. And that's what they complained about, and they didn't appreciate the money. And these little things begin, and they shouldn't have listened to these people, because who are the people that should carry the weight and their words count? The people who suffered in Mitzrayim in servitude for the 210 years, this was still way better, and they had to appreciate the fact that they were now free people, not under the yoke of the Egyptians any longer, and they were free to do what they wanted basically here, and they were marching along the way, finally about to enter the land of Israel in a very short time frame at this point, and they let the riffraff, the people who had it good, they were Mitzrayim, they were living in Mitzrayim, as being their masters, and they let these people influence us. Well, that's why it tells us, "V'asaf suf asher b'kirbo hisavu tavo." They generated the discontent of the people around them. We don't always, we shouldn't always listen to the people who are complaining. Who are the complainers amongst us? Are the ones that maybe who were very rich and now poor, a poor person who has his life is much better than it was before. He's got nothing to complain about. He's very happy with his things. But if you start to tell him, oh, you could have this and you could have this and you could have this, is a zeh washir hasomeach bechelko. These were the normal people would be someach bechelko, but the Mitzrayim were not, because they had it better in Egypt than they had it now. The only trouble that they remember was the last year when God rained down upon them the 10 makos, and for that they suffered. And we always spend too much time worrying about the people. Now, when we get to the end of the parsha, just to move along, it says we have a very interesting situation here, which is when it tells us Vayish Moshe Anov Miot. And we wonder why God chooses this time period to say he's a very humble person. But what does that really mean? Does it mean that Moshe didn't know who he was? Of course, any person who's a great scientist, Einstein certainly knew if he would want to be as humble as he would be only a fool. He would have to be a fool not to know that the theory of relativity or the law of relativity as he proposed it, it was a great scientific achievement, and he knew he was one of the greatest, if not the greatest scientist of his era, one of the greatest scientists of all time. But anybody who reaches that pinnacle of success knows that. And so when it says, "Vatadaber Miriam v'Aaron b'Moshe," it doesn't necessarily mean that Moshe didn't hear it. They spoke about Moshe, but according to some commentators, he heard them. What was the occurrence that happened? Is Eldon Umeidon Misnabi Mamachane, when she heard Yoshua came in and said that Eldon Umeidon Misnabi Mamachane, in other words, what is the inference of Misnabi Mamachane? Means they were giving nevuah, they were having a prophecy of their own accord, as opposed to the other Nevi'im, the Shivim Ishaz, the Kainim, the 70 elders that were waxing prophetic in their thing, were in the proximity of Moshe. So it was, so to speak, the fallout from Moshe Rabbeinu. The Shechina of Moshe Rabbeinu had his own Shechina presence, that he was able to get the interference, so to speak, of Moshe's Shechina lent forth. But Eldad Umeidad, who were well away from Moshe, far away by Machaneh, and they were actually having nevuah of their own accord, of their own schus, their own merit. And now Tzipora made the point of saying, oh, to their wives, because now if they are on that level, then their wives will have to separate from them, just as my husband separated from me. And Miriam was saying, Miriam and Aaron had the temerity to say, who does Moshe think he is? I mean, we are also Nevi'im, and we are, I'm a Navi, you, Aaron, are also a Navi, and we don't separate from our husbands and wives. How come Moshe has to do it? Moshe was very upset. Moshe, he wasn't particularly upset. But the question is, why was God's answer that Moshe is a humble person? He could have just said, don't you appreciate the stature of Moshe Rabbeinu right away, and not just make the pronouncement of how humble he is. But the point is, sometimes we know that when politicians or certain people are faced with, allegations against them, they say they refuse comment. It's not worth my time and energy to answer such a ridiculous charge. I don't even choose to answer it, because who do they think they are? And that's what happens a lot of times. So God wanted Miriam and Aaron to understand. Moshe heard, and maybe you'll think for a minute that, or the other people who heard saw also, that Moshe did not answer the complaints against him. He might be thinking, who are these people that they would want to even say anything about me? They have no right to talk about me. I am so above them. And that would be a haughty attitude about it, not to sit down and discuss it. And Moshe Rabbeinu just took it on the chin, and the reason he didn't answer, God is telling him, I want you to know the reason Moshe didn't answer you, Vayish Moshe Anov Miod Mikol Huadam. He is the most humble person. He understands what you're saying, and he takes it as tochacha, but the fact is, I want you to all come into the Ohel Moed. Oh, you can't handle the Shechina? Ah, but Moshe can. You have to be ready to receive, as we mentioned so many times, to receive at any time. Miriam and Aaron, when you have your prophetic visions, Moshe comes and tells you, you have time to prepare. When Moshe and I have conversations, it's on a whole different level, and I want you to appreciate it. But nevertheless, even though he told them and Moshe saw that she turned, she had her, the English word, of course, leprosy, she had the tzaras, even though that happened to her, he said, Kel no refa no la. he still had tremendous respect for his elder sister. He knew that this was the sister who basically, that we said when we began the whole story of Moshe Rabbeinu, his beginnings, that she was the one who, on that level, as humanly possible, saved his life. She waited to see what would happen to Moshe and followed through and was so concerned about her father. But the interesting thing when it says, Yavio Yorok Yorok Bifoneha, what is that all about? Because we know that why didn't Aaron get Tzaras if he was involved, and why didn't he get the Tzaras? On one level, that of course it was Miriam who spoke, but Aaron is guilty because he could have told her to stop talking, that Moshe is not who you think he is. He's not on the same level. He accepted what she said, and therefore he's guilty as charged too. The difference being, for Aaron, this was the first offense. For Miriam, this was not her first offense. And that was the meaning of the pasuk, V'yovio yorok yorok b'foneha. Because when Paro says, Kol ha'bein ha'ilot ha'yorot ha'shlichu, and Amram and Yocheved separated because they didn't want to have any children that would maybe be thrown into the Nile River, and she said that Paro decreed against only the male children, and you, by not having relations, are decreeing against women too. And so they got back together and they said, you're right. And now, but she had the temerity to talk to her father in that manner. She had no right. The fact that it worked out was not to her benefit, nevertheless. And he said, Yovio, Yorok, Gorok, before hell. Don't you think her father practically, if not literally, spit in her face, but looked at his younger daughter, imagine a 7-year-old child or a 6-year-old child saying to the parents, you know, something of that nature, you would be embarrassed. And it's so this was her second offense. And for the second offense, it's unfortunate for her. She had to be the one to suffer with the tzaras. And nevertheless, Moshe, seeing all this and knowing all this, still was able to say, Moshe Rabbeinu, being who he was, Kael Defono La. The word No being used twice in the pasuk, as I said, the first time for beseeching God to heal her, and the second one, No, meaning do it immediately. And God acquiesced to the first No, but not to the second. He soger shivas yomim. I will reduce the 14-day period of solitude to 7 days, but nevertheless, he soger shivas yomim. And we will be able to travel. But the godless of Miriam was, it's not that they just left her there. They were getting ready to move, but they had to wait those 7 days that Miriam was in quarantine, as we're well aware what it means today. They waited at that time. And this parasha now is the beginning of all the tzaras that we have. Next week, of course, we have the Meraglim, and then Korach, and various other situations that brought them down. And this is all down to the thought process of not appreciating what you have, to look around you and to appreciate what could have been to what we have now, to look on the bright side. Klal Yisrael were, for the lack of looking on the bright side, they had to languish for 39 more years in the Midbar. May we see the light, so to speak, and not have to suffer the fire of God, rather the HT Alayla Bo, the fire of God in the heavens, just to light our way rather than to scorch us. Have a good week.